Blog Talk Radio.
In this show, I will be interviewing producer Eric Henry. We will be talking about his new independent film, Pacific 201. Hold on while Eric joins the show. Eric, you there, man?
Yeah.
How you doing, man? Welcome to the show. How's it going with you today?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Doing pretty good. That's excellent, man. That's great stuff. I was researching your film, man. It's incredible. I'm going to get started here. For the listeners, just going to introduce you here right quick. You're Eric Henry, and you're a man of many talents, it seems, and you're working on a super cool new film called Pacific 201. For everybody, just can you like go over like what Pacific 201 is about, like kind of how you came up with the idea of creating such a film like that?
Well, you know, Pacific 201 is a Star Trek film that's kind of about the formation of that positive, collaborative, co-cooperation kind of future that we see in Star Trek. And the idea kind of came to me about 2 years ago when I was kind of starting to get into the fan film world with Star Trek. And what I was seeing was a lot of kind of imitation and a lot of treading, like stories that always covered the same ground and didn't really, they were fun and I enjoyed watching them, but they didn't really communicate what I felt that Star Trek was all about, which was kind of making people excited about the future and wanting to be a part of a better world.
Right. Totally. I understand what you're saying, man. Now, your film, I was researching, is set in between Enterprise and the original series. What exactly made you want to set it in that era rather than, like, the other Next Generation-esque type series or whatever?
Well, firstly, that era is totally unburdened by canon. There's no Star Trek that takes place in that era. There's Enterprise era, there's TOS, but it's this totally empty climate to explore, and I felt like that gave me a lot of storytelling flexibility.
Very interesting. And I noticed your film also involves and mentions the Romulan War. And as fans might remember, like the original FTOS episode, Balance of Terror, where they were first introduced, how are you going about like presenting not only the Romulans in Pacific, but like, are there any changes being made to their presentation or any other stuff like that, their ships even?
Well, the Romulans, as we see them, I mean, there is a little bit of new design going to them just because of the era, but we do kind of accept more the TOS representation of Romulans, this kind of more noble, more elite kind of Romanesque as they were originally, rather than the TNG Romulans, who are more like conniving cliche villains that kind of are come across as like a racist stereotype of some sort. So the Romulans are much more noble and cultured in Pacific 201.
Very cool. So you took more of the original motif and didn't really use too much. Like you said, you kept it more like the original back in the 60s. Very cool, very cool. Well, I noticed you mentioned online on some of your videos having actually toured actual naval vessels and, I believe, a national shuttle. Just curious, while you were doing research for the film, like, could you tell everybody first off about that and then some of the things you, like, learned while you were doing research in that area for the film exactly?
Tours and stuff, and actually looking at real, you know, the space shuttle and ships and stuff like that was important because a big push of Pacific 201 is to make it feel like real life, like all the locales are actually real places rather than, you know, a fictional representation of something that'll never happen. So, you know, we toured the battleship New Jersey, which is docked in the Delaware River. And when you're actually in kind of a, you know, a cramped space with pipes and stuff exposed, you know, you get a feeling for what a future starship might feel like. You know, it's all kind of cold and it's cramped. And then you start to realize how much of the original series is actually, the look of the original series is actually based off battleships. Like, the sets kind
right.
of look deep to us, but when you're actually on a battleship, I felt like I was on original series sets sometimes. Like, they really do kind of look like that, and there are some things that are reinterpreted. Like, in the original series, we have these red intercom panels on the wall, whereas in a battleship, you have red telephones on the wall. Like, it was something that felt very grounded to me. So that kind of stuff is now very important to the look of Pacific 201. It wasn't just an arbitrary decision in the original series to make those panels red, represent the red telephones on a battleship. Or the green paint in sick bay in the original series is almost exactly the same shade of green on old battleships. Like, those things are very firmly connected to that.
Wow, I didn't even think about the green in the sick bay. That's true. But your movie's striving for realism, it seems like, and also, you know, I like that way you're going, by the way, about the naval way. That's pretty darn cool. Everything looks like you're going, like, in the space for realism, looking like it looks really good, by the way, in the space scenes. Who's responsible for designing, like, the look of not just the ships, but, like, the CGI and bringing all that out in the sense of the realism factor there?
Currently, all the CGI has been me personally.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't have a full team selected, though we have now welcomed, I can't pronounce his name, like Alain Rivard. I think it's like a French name. But he worked on the reboot Battlestar Galactica, and he also worked on Star Trek Enterprise as a 3D modeler. He's now helping us out with some of our ship models. He's doing our shuttlecraft right now, so that's really exciting.
Okay, very cool, very cool. And I noticed you did the shuttle or pod or whatever, like in one of the trailers it was dropping. It had those, what you call it, the drop, like shuttle bays. And I noticed you were talking about the Daedalus-class ship, and you made some minor modifications, like a sensor dish, which I thought was really cool to do that. Are any of the other ships, like the NX-01, going to be modified at all? I know they had up technology on that as time progressed, or any other stuff we might see in the ship range there?
Yeah, the NX class has been slightly redesigned for Pacific 201, and that can be explained as the fact that Pacific 201 takes place, you know, half a century later, so the ships aren't going to look identical to how they looked, you know, real naval
right.
vessels get refit and stuff like that. The thing about the NX class is it doesn't get nearly as much screen time as even the Daedalus class, which doesn't get that much screen time to begin with. But we have done, I think, a pretty cool redesign of the NX class that pushes it more towards the original series aesthetic. Some of the lines are straightened. Some of the details are kind of combined, so it's not so junky and greebly. It's kind of a sleeker, slightly more 60s-esque aesthetic.
Very cool. Are you going to have, like, phasers? Or I guess you would have phasers and shields by that era due to the upgrades in technology, right?
Yeah, we're imagining that shields are still kind of like a limited technology. So when they say raise shields, they don't mean there's a bubble around the entire ship. There's more like critical areas that get shielded. And go ahead.
I was just saying, oh, cool.
Oh, okay. Well, there's actually going to be, they're actually currently on this ship. There are details on the ship that are meant to be shield emitters and stuff like that, which we will probably publish more information later about the ship, because there are so many little tiny details on the Pacific that would go unnoticed otherwise, such as shield emitters and stuff like that. But we imagine there's a pretty healthy balance between polarized hull plating from Enterprise and then minimal shielding, you know, a blend of the two.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I agree with you on that. And I noticed, like, when the ship flies by, from my perspective, you can see a little bit more detail, and it does look way realistic compared to a lot of the other, just personal preference, a lot of the other films they, some of them look a little bit more real, but then some of them look more kind of, you know, I'm talking about, like, not as realistic CGI-wise as other stuff. But yours looks fantastic. It looks really close to some of the, like, I noticed that one scene when you're going through the clouds or something like that. It had that almost like, it looked better in some, believe it or not, than the JJ. The JJ film, the first film, was pretty good. I just thought this looked a little bit more real, you know, more like a NASA space shuttle or something to look in the space. Now, so are you utilizing, like, physical sets for filming? And then you had a Starship Bridge. First question is, what kind of sets can we expect to see in the film, you know, including the bridge? And what differences might there be compared to that bridge from, like, the NX or the original series bridge? And what other stuff can we see in the set range there?
Well, yeah, we'll see the bridge, obviously. And we'll probably see main engineering. We'll see... Mm-hmm. The captain's ready room, you know, pretty much typically the kind of sets we see in Star Trek. Basically, what we're going to be doing is building a set number of modular set pieces that we can rearrange into more sets. So we can actually have an unlimited number of sets because we can mix and match parts and repaint parts, and then suddenly we have sick bay or something like that. But as far as stylistically speaking, we're very much grounding the look, kind of a blend between like late 60s, early 70s NASA mission control and then like a naval destroyer. So the actual shape of the consoles are very reminiscent of NASA mission control from like the late 60s, early 70s. Like if you watch Apollo 13, those kind of consoles are what we're going for on the bridge. But the actual functionality and some other details are very grounded in, like, naval destroyers. And the color paint we're going to be using on the bridge is actually derived from Norwegian naval vessels. Like, it's a particular shade of blue that's supposed to... It's kind of a modern modern Navy look, but the fact that it's painted is kind of retro feeling, so we kind of get the best of both worlds.
Wow, that's amazing. That's retro to the gills there. It sounds like you said, going back to the Apollo 13, like kind of that more like not so touch screen and stuff, more like knobs and switches and things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Let's talk props. And then besides the sets, I noticed that your look of your uniform is a bit different than the ones we've seen before and other things, and things like the phasers, communicators, stuff like that, a little different. Would you say the inspiration for the look is more off like, I mean, you're kind of going for a realism, but more like the Prime Universe or JJ Universe or Hybrid or your own take? How would you say you got the, like, the inspiration for some of the look and feel of the props and the uniforms and stuff like that?
The look and the feel of the props and stuff is more like... looking at the original series through a lens of tempered realism. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand the importance of making things canonical, keeping designs consistent, but in many ways, the original series, you know, it was how the future was envisioned 50 years ago. So when I'm looking at a phaser, it kind of looks like a toy. Like, it doesn't look like something that could kill me, for instance. So when we designed the phasers, we thought, well, how can we blend the iconic elements of a phaser with a real-world firearm so that when you look at it, you know this thing means business? So that's why our phaser looks much more like a firearm rather than, like, a toy or a television remote like in The Next Generation. Or even the phase pistols in Enterprise, they were literally using the phase pistol toy on screen in season 4. Stuff like that.
That's
like,
right.
The phase pistol doesn't really look like a weapon to me either. It looks like plastic. It looks like a science fiction show prop rather than something that's actually, you know, meant to be a weapon. So, like, that's how we approach the design of the phaser and some of the other props.
Very cool. And are you designing the look of the prop? I know the communicator looked a little different, well, more than a little different. The control, more control features, and just looked a little bit more detailed than some of the other versions throughout the films and the original series. Are you designing those, or you have somebody else designing all the features and the look of those, or how's that going about exactly? Just curious.
Currently, I've been designing the props, though we don't have a final version of any prop other than the phaser.
Okay.
Which I did collaborate on with another artist, Noah Summers, who actually built the 3D model from which we printed the phaser prop. It's a 3D printed prop.
Oh, wow. Very cool. And the communicator looks fantastic, by the way, and the phaser as well. Should we expect to see, just curious, I'm sure a lot of people are curious about this. I know a lot of these other fan films, they go and they recruit older actors and people and veterans from different films. Is there anybody in particular from any other Star Trek shows or any other shows in general from the sci-fi world that you might want to have to take part in the film? Or are you going to go more towards just not being distracted or anything by, or how are you going to go about that? Just curious.
Yeah, normally what I tell people is that I think putting in current Trek actors, or I mean previous mm-hmm. Trek actors, is kind of a distraction or like a gimmick. There's really no
right.
place for it in Pacific 201, except for it'd be really nice to get Scott Bakula to play Archer. He could fit very easily into part of the film as like an 80-year-old Archer.
Right.
So that would be difficult to secure. I'm told that he's hard to get a hold of. But other than that, we don't really have our sights set on any Trek actors, though, you know, you never know what the future holds. We do have some connections with Axanar, and we might be able to work something out. But entirely speculation. I'm not making any announcements.
I got you. You mentioned Axanar. That's another really cool film out there. I believe I read you were working on that a little bit. Could you tell everybody just a little brief in summary what you're doing on that and a little bit about that right quick?
Yeah, I've actually been with Axanar for almost 2 years now. Actually, maybe more than 2 years. I'm one of the concept artists working on Axanar. I designed the bridge. I'm also working on some other sets and some other props as well.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I noticed they have Studios Ares based on the same name as the ship. Are you not utilizing, you just said you designed the bridge for the Axanar production. Are you utilizing any of those sets perhaps for Pacific 201? And if so, are you making any heavily or any kind of modifications to those specifically for your film?
The thought has crossed my mind. The problem being, Pacific 201 is located on the East Coast, and Axanar is located in L.A. There's a lot
right.
of logistical problems with travel. We don't really have – we do have a small unit production, part of the production, where there's only a few scenes that are filmed on another Federation ship, where we might be able to actually travel out somewhere and shoot. We also have another scene that takes place with Romulans that – might travel somewhere else to shoot, though they're not going to have that kind of set available to us. So, I mean, it's possible, but it's not really feasible.
Yeah, it was interesting to see. I was curious to ask that question. Now, your film, beyond striving for realism, like you were mentioning, it presents more of like a real, true feel to the original vision of Star Trek, like a vision of the future for everybody. Just curious, in your own words, what message would you like the viewer first off to take from watching Pacific 201 as a whole? And then what does Star Trek's vision of the future and just in general mean to you personally?
Well, I guess a big part of the Pacific 201 message is that the exploration of space is worth it. There's something meaningful and there's something important to us out there. As Carl Sagan said, the very survival of the human race rests upon our ability to, you know, explore the stars. So that's not a direct quote, it's paraphrasing. But that's part of a major push behind Pacific 201. And I feel like beyond the nitty-gritty specifics of Star Trek, it's about being excited for the future, that the future holds something good for us. It's not, you know, the annihilation of mankind. We're not going to kill ourselves. We're not going to destroy our planet. We're not going to nuke each other out of existence. Like, all of these things combine. It's Star Trek says the future is something good for us. And I feel like that's a big part of Pacific 201 as well.
Right. Right. Well, I agree with you on that, man. I totally agree. And I love the way and the approach you're going with your film, which is freaking fantastic, to paraphrase there. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Right quick, before we end, do you have any, like, website links or other information you'd like to update people or give out to find out more about the film and various projects? And also, are you having any upcoming other things beyond action or other stuff you're involved in that you'd like to shout out about?
Well, I would just tell anybody to go to pacific201.com. There's links to our Kickstarter. There's links to our YouTube channel. There's links to our Facebook page. It's all there, all the information you'll need. And as far as other things, I'm not going to spoil anything.
Nice.
So
okay, I got you, man.
That's it.
Cool, man. Well, it was a pleasure having you on the show, man. That was an awesome blast, and I look forward to seeing your film, man.
Thank you.
You're most welcome, man. You have a good day, buddy.
You too.